Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefrey, and this is episode number 257. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Truly appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people we have in our business. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Samson, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with people that I believe in, products that I believe in, and Samson does a fantastic job of creating tailor-made solutions for your weight room. So if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If not, just the next time you see them, tell them how much you appreciate being a part of Iron Game Chalk Talk. This week, I'm joined by Dr. Corey Peacock. He is a associate professor at Nova Southeastern. He's the head performance coach and sports scientist for Peacock Performance. And a guy that I've followed for a while now, but it's the first time that we've really got a chance to kind of interact. So, man, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, very excited about this. Like you said, you followed me for a while. I'm sure I followed you for a lot longer. So really excited about this.
Corey, you pretty much went from, a bachelor's degree to master's degree or straight to PhD, kind of had some foresight to kind of a clear direction of what you wanted to do academically. Sure. Go and start working for the University of Miami, leads to the Fight Game. And now this great career in the Fight Game. Talk a little bit about that transition. Like, what got you into the Fight Game, and why have you been so successful there?
I've always been a fight fan. So, first and foremost, I can just remember spending hours and hours staying up late in the basement, the garage with my dad, my grandpa, watching fights and stuff like that. It's always been something I've been very interested in. From an academic standpoint, as a physiologist, it's been a sport that to me has always been a challenge. As strength and conditioning coaches, we know first thing you're ever going to do with an athlete is let's analyze the sport in which the athlete's going to compete before we do anything else. Go analyze MMA. Put 10 very well-respected strength coaches in a room, have each of them analyze MMA, and see the differences you come up with. That's what's so beautiful about the sport. It's challenging in every angle. When I was here in South Florida, I was working with Miami, like you said, football, and I had an opportunity open up. Actually just fought this previous weekend, Vitor Belfort, an absolute legend in MMA. And he was fighting Chris Weidman at the time for a title, and that was my first, which to me is crazy to think that that's my first experience in the fight sport, is working on a title camp with Vitor Belfort. Yeah. From there, it's expanded into, a great role at this point now with Peacock Performance, partnered up with Hard Knocks and Henry Hoof Squad. I'm training anywhere up to about 24 UFC, Bellator, ONE FC championship pro fighters right now.
I want to dive a little bit deeper into that and just talk about, here you are, you're at the University of Miami, you have a passion for the fight game, but there's a lot of coaches out there that are listening to that saying, man, I sure do wish I could freaking get a title fight as my opening. What were the steps that you took to kind of even put your name out there or put yourself in a position to hear about something like that?
Okay, so where it really boiled down to, when I got down to South Florida, I didn't know anybody. So it was a matter of networking and really just busting my butt every day to make those right connections and really saying no to any opportunity that came my way. It was one of those things where a lot of people, I think when they receive a PhD or when they earn a PhD, I think they believe that, they made it. That's it. That wasn't the case for me. I think it was an opportunity that has put some credibility behind my name, but it still doesn't mean anything.
Right.
You go out there and utilize it and do something with it. And I had an opportunity to where I actually teach the Miami Dolphins are on our campus, the training facility. So Darren Krein, head strength and conditioning coach, at the time with the Miami Dolphins, he and I partnered up and started doing some research on soft tissue, foam rolling, different warm-up activations and things like that. Published a little bit in Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research, published a little bit in International Journal of Exercise Science together. And that was really my first connection down here in South Florida into the football thing. He was an alumni of University of Miami. So here I am, a professor. I also started down at University of Miami coaching football as well. So really through those two channels, this fighter at the time, Vitor, being one of the most established fighters, was just, you know, just coming off of, at the time in the UFC, testosterone replacement therapy was legal through, you know, or whatever, was approved as long as it was for medical reasoning and so forth. Well, when USADA came in, they banned the testosterone replacement therapy. So that's really where Vitor and I came together. He was looking for somebody to start doing some testing, how to elevate testosterone through human physiology and different things like that. And that's how it channeled. You know, he was reaching out to the best organizations, the Dolphins, University of Miami, Florida Panthers. He was looking for every pro strength coach, performance coach out there to try to find the answers. And I was fortunate enough that every single person that he asked referred them to me, knowing that I have a laboratory and a background in human physiology. So it really didn't start off as strength and conditioning, which was, I think, is funny. It started off as physiological testing, athlete evaluation. And then about 3 months of doing that with multiple fighters, I remember that, you know, at the time our team owner was finally like, what do you actually do? I was like, you know, I have a strength and conditioning coach. I've coached, you know, multiple athletes over my time. But I have a background in physiology, and that's where the opportunity came, where we had so many fighters and not enough coaches, and that's how it all evolved.
Well, pretty forward thinking by that fighter to be seeking out testosterone replacement alternatives.
Yeah, you know, and that was the biggest thing about it. It was a lot of fighters, you know, really went through this at the time where medically they were, you know, they were taking it through medical channels. And when the agency, I think it was October 2016, when USADA came into the UFC and completely cut every sort of, you know, what they consider performance enhancer, you know, and so that's where it was.
No, it's interesting. Well, you don't get a chance to go work on a title fight or work with some of these elite athletes without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you made and how you learned from it?
You know, when I came, you know, making the transition from football to MMA, I still had somewhat of that football mentality. I think, you know, with football players, you've coached, you know, you've coached so many football players yourself. You know, we have the ability to put on size, to put on mass. We have time to develop certain things at certain points in time. Jumping into this MMA game, I was taking that approach. And now here I am in a sport where we're weight cutting at all points of time in the year, where essentially, unless you're one of the top two or three athletes in the world, you don't have the luxury of really knowing when you're going to fight without an opportunity of a short notice fight, a title shot, whatever, being put in there. So we're almost doing what we say scientifically we can't do, keeping an athlete peaked or close to peaking year round.
Right.
It's one of those things that is completely different. So to be honest with you, I think when I jumped into MMA, my biggest mistake was volume. I was putting way too much volume on these guys. And a lot of these athletes coming from martial arts backgrounds don't have a lot of strength and conditioning training.
Right.
Your wrestlers do, typically your college athletes do, but that's not the majority of the fight sport. A lot of these guys didn't come from that kind of background.
Right.
So even 2 days of a stimulus, like strength training to them, man, these guys were blowing up. They're getting huge. They're putting on mass. And now here we are 4 weeks away from a fight. And now instead of being 18 pounds over, he's 21 pounds. He put on some crazy amount of muscle in a short period of time. And that was the biggest adjustment.
Yeah. You
know, that volume to me, that was the biggest mistake I made. And, you know, I was trying too much. I was trying to be too fancy. I was watching social media, I was, you know, just pulling out all of these ideas and trying these things. And when I got down to the basics of just understanding the sport as a whole, you know, there's so much neurological demand being put on these guys through wrestling, jiu-jitsu, striking, boxing, kickboxing. There's so much stimulus being put in at all times. The more simplified I can keep a strength and conditioning program, the more benefit I'm seeing with these athletes. And that was a big rude awakening for me. The first series of evaluations that I ran after my first, I would say after my first 3 months of training, the athletes that I was working with, I retested them, and the numbers weren't anywhere near where I thought they would be or the progression I wanted. And it made me really, you know, and I still consistently do that. I'm always analyzing where these athletes are. Did we meet these goals? What do we need to do differently? And, you know, that's the biggest thing. Just keep adapting, keep learning, keep changing as I go through this.
Yeah, I've heard that echoed by, you know, Lauren Lando and Bo Sandoval and Phil DeRue, and just talking about how, you know, how honestly, how simple the program actually is, but yeah. How, you know, how the response is tremendous because of that. And I think so many times as coaches, that's a common mistake where we want to throw variety in just to keep our energy up, but then the reality is that the basics work.
You know, and being a strength and conditioning coach, we still have to realize at the end of the day, the head coach isn't happy with the work that we're doing, we're going to lose those fighters. We're going to lose those athletes. We're going to lose those clients. And, you know, that was the biggest thing. When I started to see my strength and conditioning programs hinder the athlete's ability a little bit the next morning at practice and during their MMA specialization, that's when I realized, like, I'm going to have a big problem here if I don't fix this. Figuring out the volume, figuring out the right stimulus where we still make gains, we still benefit, the athlete's still peaking at the proper time, but we're not affecting he or she's other forms of training.
Well, I want to dig into that a little bit. You talked a little bit about the evaluation process and you know, obviously you come from a football background, I come from a football background, and pretty much the evaluation process has always been in football, the combine, you know, test, and you're always training for that. But now you go from that to a sport that doesn't have any kind of real strength and conditioning evaluation methods. And you come at it from a physiology background and laboratory background as well as testing. And so let's talk a little bit about the good, the bad, the ugly of evaluation. And then what was your approach to kind of coming in and saying, this is what we need to test?
Yeah. And again, that was another learning process where I can tell you this right now, where you're right. I came from the football background. What do? We bench, we jump, we run. That's what's important to me. And trying to figure out how to manipulate some of those certain tests to apply to MMA. You know, I've done things like a bench press rep out with the weight class that they're competing at. I've done things like a prowler sled push with the weight class they're competing at as well. I've done vertical leap. I've done all of those things that you can think of, but I've really narrowed it down to things that I truly believe apply to the sport. Some of the very simple things, looking at something like a vertical leap. You know, a vertical is a great test for me to run on a weekly basis with my athletes to really monitor nervous system, monitor fatigue. But does it really carry over into the sport itself as an application? You know, I found for what I wanted to test, maybe taking something like a vertical and changing it to a broad jump has been more beneficial, as the sport itself is played in rather than jumping, is played really forward and back. So things like that, simple tests that I've really manipulated. But basically I can kind of start with, when an athlete comes in, what am I going to do with an actual athlete and where am I at with my battery now? I'm going to start off with body composition and water. So, you know, it's very important in a weight cut sport that we have a gauge on those kind of things. How much lean mass do we have? How much total body water do we have? How much can we manipulate in this weight cut and bring the athlete back safely, properly, and those things? And I think that's that has to be the most important evaluation tool in this sport, because that's where I believe that we're seeing the most things in preparation go wrong, is that weight cut or even that rehydration after the weight cut. So that's first and foremost, that's going to be the first test that we're going to do with our athletes. From there, we're going to do a balance / concussion testing. You know, we'll use basically your basic best test that an athletic trainer would use if somebody got their bell rung during a football game. First test they're going to do. I like it. Why? Because it gives you balance. But also, more importantly, if we do have somebody that's taken a shot during practice, we have something to baseline them off of and decide if we need to take further medical precautions and those kind of things. So So, you know, I really like that test. I'm going to do the broad jump. I'm going to do that both counter movement and non-counter movement. Look at, you know, look at a strength deficit within that strength power deficit to kind of periodize those things a little bit better. From there, I'll kind of go into movement. We'll do a couple of different movement things, look at where some of their activation things are and stuff like that. And then I'll take them into my laboratory testing. So laboratory testing, I'm going to do a Wingate test to look at anaerobic ability, look at anaerobic fatigue, look at relative power output. And from there, I'll take them into a VO2 max test where I'll look at, you know, aerobic capacity. I'll look at thresholds, anaerobic and aerobic. And more importantly, I'll look at blood lactate accumulation throughout those things. And really that's my basic testing with the athlete. We'll talk, I'll really get to understand them and what they feel is going to be a benefit to them along with the coaches. And I really take all that stuff and figure out what is the most important thing for that athlete to succeed. Usually I'll pick about 1 to 2 and really build a program around those two, whatever those performance variables might be. And from there, you know, hope that everything else with proper programming, periodization, those things can evolve and get better as well over time. So that's really where I'm at. And it's worked really, really well with these athletes.
Any strength power?
Yeah, I do an upper body pull. So I'll do a functional pull up. It's an underhand grip, really looking at core function along with the actual muscular endurance with that. And I'll do a deadlift off the ground. So we do deadlift testing as well.
Perfect. You talked a little bit about peaking. You know, this is something that is an area of interest for me right now, because I mean, you go from, you know, I've worked in special forces where you have to kind of keep your athletes in a constant state of readiness. I mean, as you mentioned, anything that's beyond a championship bout is kind of last minute, you know, sometimes and you're going into it. But I mean, let's talk about it in a more traditional type of sport like football or something, where you're peaking for the season or you're peaking for the week, the competition.
Yep.
You know, I think that it's a misguided or misunderstood concept, because the typical regression then would be to simply just reduce volume, and that's my idea of peaking, you know. Right. But you want to keep them neurally high. So let's talk about peaking and then some of the strategies that you've used to kind of keep that to where the athlete doesn't mentally check out because they're doing less.
Yeah.
And that they feel ready.
You know, one of the strategies that I've used, and I very much have enjoyed it and like this, is some form of testing right before fight week. So, you know, depending on the athlete and depending on their skill, there's certain athletes that I feel comfortable with. You know, for instance, I'm going to look at Danny Roberts, for instance. He's a UFC fighter out of the UK who just had a nasty knockout finish in his last fight. You know, 11 days before his fight, he pulled a PR off the racks for a one rep. That was our day. He came in, he warmed up, he pulled, and he got out of there. But mentally, knowing that that was the strongest that he's been since we started working together, knowing that he PR'd, I think he went off, you know, and benefited from that. I'll do the same thing with certain power movements, whether it's a med ball toss, whether it's a bench press, depending on that athlete and where they feel that weakness is. I have no problem working a PR close to that. If they're a little bit less experienced, then my peaking, you know, for those athletes might be more metabolically conditioning, whatever the case might be. You know, we do a lot of heart rate training. We do a lot of work capacity, and we measure the amount of repetitions and volume and things like that we can achieve during a conditioning session. You know, so really that for me is the best strategy that I've had, is really trying to hit that PR right before we hit that taper. You know, that's been the biggest thing for me. You really got to pick and choose wisely, because I think understanding when you can do that is really important in the sport as well. With these guys, depending on where they are weight wise, you also have to be very careful as to when they start to cut weight. You know, our biggest thing is we try to keep our athletes at fight weight all the way up till about their, I would say about 10 to 11 days off of their fight. You know, we'll try to keep them functioning. We'll try to keep them sparring at a high level, cutting the volume back, but keeping that intensity drastically higher than it was even the week before, and just keeping it short. But we know once that weight cut sets in, everything, you know, that's when we're in our taper. That's when firing, that's when mobility, that's when those things come in. And we still try to keep that in. And I think that's an important thing as well, to keep where I think a lot of people have a, when it's fight week, they're done. No, we still have our program. We still are following that program, that strength and conditioning, all the way up until the fight, just like we would, you know, in a sport like football. It's game week. You don't just stop lifting weights.
Right.
You'll have a progression in there. And so it's been really, like I said, it's a learning experience. I've tried a lot of different things with this, but I really, really enjoy and pushing those athletes that I feel most confident with in one aspect of power, strength, or, you know, metabolic conditioning, depending on where we're at.
So going back to our football, you know, and saying it's an 8-week off season, I mean, you would essentially train all the way up until that 7th week and then test that week 8.
Yep.
You're thinking that the mental benefit of PR and combined with the reduction in volume is going to lead to them being ready for the season.
I do. Football is a tricky sport. I know how football is, and I know how those guys are. But I do think it's, you know, and maybe with a sport like football, and I guess I've coached football, I would do it differently. Where I think going from off season to preseason, preseason to in season, and doing the, you know, that's usually where I've tested those athletes, other than on a weekly basis. But then again, you know, I had a good strength coach in college that, you know, we were pushing a lot of weight, during the in season, and a lot of people were PRing on a lot of the upper body lifts rather than lower body lifts. But, you know, people were still hitting PRs on the bench and things like that. And, you know, maybe that's partially where I got it from.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. You mentioned a little bit of some of the X factors, you know, sleep and supplementation and all those types of things. I mean, especially a sport like MMA where it's still relatively new.
Sure.
And everybody's looking for all the magic pills and the, you know, all the different ways to get ahead of their competition.
Yep.
How do you manage that, you know, in terms of constantly being able to decipher the BS that they're probably bringing in, combined with, you know, educating them on, you know, some of these things where let's face it, the fight world's not necessarily the one that goes to bed at 10 o'clock every night, gets up at 6 a.m.
You know, it's tricky. One thing that I've had the ability to do, and I've been fortunate to be able to do this, I've had the ability to utilize a lot of sports science, a lot of technology. I think different companies like the educational component to it that I can bring to it. So I've been fortunate enough to utilize a lot and be able to experiment with certain athletes and see how they respond to certain stimulus. I'm at a point now where I know my athletes well enough that really each athlete is probably monitored through one aspect of either neurofunctioning, heart rate variability, or sleep. So that's typically where it is. I don't have all three on the athletes anymore like I was doing, seeing how they respond to it. So really it was usually where the athlete was, where they were showing the lowest amount of readiness based on whatever that was, and that's kind of where we've really stuck with that. So my athletes that had poor sleeping habits, those are my athletes that are still to this day probably being monitored with a wrist wearable looking at sleep and readiness. Right. It's something that's in their head all of the time. And, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at with it. My athletes that have the ability are usually, like my athletes that overtrain, I'm usually putting something on them, whether or not it's usually heart rate variability with those athletes to look at, you know, look what you're doing to yourself. You're going to go in there during this session because you did three sessions yesterday, and you're going to give you're going to push through it. I know how you are mentally. You're going to be able to get through practice, but your performance is going to be shit. So it's like, we have to be able to read these tools. So that's been one of the biggest things that I've been able to do. Supplementation's been great. We have a lot of great partners. You know, certain athletes are sponsored by certain supplement companies, but Dymatize has been great to my athletes, my team. On It has been great to my athletes and my team, among other companies. So we've been able to really, what I think has been a missing piece in the MMA world, is really start to get the athletes to understand supplementation and understand proper timing and putting the right things into their body. Because, you know, between those two things, you know, we have so many different ways. There's so many different modalities out there in terms of recovery and preparation, whether it be ice, compression, whatever the case might be. And you look at the research and all of them show some beneficial adaptations. Some of them show no adapt, whatever the case might be. But we have two things, sleep and nutrition, that we can control or at least improve as coaches and athletes, and those two things can dictate our performance drastically. So it's been great looking at all of those different avenues, and then having the university affiliation and the research background to be able to study these things. You know, we've analyzed sleep. We had eight of our UFC athletes in a closed environment over the course of an entire preparation fight camp. And we've measured, you know, all of their sleep variables, aligning that with performance, aligning that with their performance in the octagon, aligning that with missed sessions, fatigue, injuries, and different things like that. And we've been able to put a really big grasp on what is the most important way for our athletes and how our athletes respond to sleep. And, you know, it's been interesting to look at that, because I think a lot of people out there would say, well, it's easy, more sleep, better you perform. But, you know, to be honest with you, that's not the case for these guys.
Right.
And I'd say it's probably not the case for a lot of athletes that are involved in two-a-day training and preparation and things like that. It's just not doable to get that sleep in. But what we've actually found is those athletes that, whether or not they sleep 8 hours, 5 hours, 4 hours, whatever case, it's irrelevant. It's the athletes that have the ability to, if they have a three-hour break, fit a small nap in, you know, 15-minute nap there every single day. And those athletes that, when they get home at 10 o'clock at night, go right to sleep and wake up at the same time. It's that consistency. Now, again, with that said, an athlete sleeping 5 hours a night over the course of a year, probably not doable. But when you have that very small window that's known as camp, whatever sport it might be very doable.
Sure.
So, you know, I've been able to do that. Done a lot of supplement studies as well with these athletes, looking at how fighters respond to overfeeding and protein and how it affects their metabolic drive. We're starting something with HMB right now. And, you know, it's been great to be able to utilize that resource and really understand what it is that is benefiting and not benefiting our athletes.
Yeah, I think I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, again, being in a sport where there's a lot of people looking for a lot of answers, you know, any possible way, to have that backed up by science, I think is ultimately the best play.
Yeah.
Man, this has been awesome. We end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Never say no early in your career. I'm telling you, you have enough time to fit everything in. You just have to do it. It's that ability when you're young and you're hungry and it's time to do it, that you have the most energy to do so. Because I'm telling you, after years and years and years of doing it, you know, it's just you also have earned the ability to say no and earn the right to say no later on in your career once you're established. But don't say no. I mean, there's so many people out there that you have the ability to learn from, network with, figure out a way to do it. It's my best piece of advice for anybody in this field.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think I'm finally at that point where I got to say no.
You have to. You have to. But
early on, I thought I was busy, and I'm a whole different level of busy now than I was earlier on. Give us a book, app, website recommendation.
Book. There is a book called Fatigue, Angelo Musso. It is old. This is an old book. It has everything to do with what we do as performance coaches and performance specialists, but it has nothing to do with, I think when he's writing it, he doesn't realize it has anything to do with it. It's a scientist professor back in the late 1800s, who is basically observing and becomes obsessive with carrier pigeons. So he's collecting these carrier pigeons, and ultimately it's him trying to understand fatigue central fatigue, peripheral fatigue, trying to understand what, you know, we spend so much time on peripheral fatigue, but yet when you read this and you think about the central nervous system and its effects on everything, it's just a really interesting take on physiology and fatigue through these eyes of a patient. And I absolutely love this textbook or this book because it just, everything that I know as a performance coach and physiologist comes up in his observations and the things he sees. So it's a really cool book. He no intention of being a book for strength and conditioning or performance coaches, but absolutely the best. In terms of websites, I'm all over the place. I still go back to my basics just because it's been a routine since I've been about 16 years old. Always go to T Nation. Always go to Elite FTS. That's my daily routine. That's the first thing that I get on. It's the first thing that I open. And like I said, it's great now because I actually will say that there was a point in time where I was younger where everything I read, oh, that's the right thing. That's the new thing. That's the right thing. That's the new thing. And now it's nice as I become more educated and a little bit older to be able to read some of the things that I see out there and make a decision. Yes, that is beneficial or no, I don't agree with that, you know, and that's, but those two things, you can't go wrong.
Any apps?
Yeah, I actually, as a coach, the app that I probably utilize the most would be MetroFit. The MetroFit app, for those of you that, you know, aren't familiar with it, it's basically an app in which, you know, I have my athletes on that they can provide a subjective assessment of their own performance on a daily basis. Very simple, you know, how well did you eat? Basically, there's a nutrition component of it. How well did you sleep? And how well did you perform? Or I guess how well, but how much and that kind of thing. How much performance did you do? And, you know, it's another app that gives you kind of a subjective readiness score. And right. I love it. Absolutely love it. Very simple. It takes the athlete, boom, 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 and they're off. And at least I'm getting some feedback. Because I always think that that's important for to understand, you know, especially the performance piece of it, where if we have a scheduled, you know, if we're on a scheduled deload week or we're on a scheduled, you know, low intensity session of whatever their skill might be, and that athlete perceived that as very difficult, well, we can do the easy thing. We can stick a heart rate monitor on them. We can analyze how, you know, and do those things, and we can assess it. And I think it's a great app.
That's fantastic. Well, man, you know, I talk about this a lot on the show about how this profession is only still 60 years old, and right. you take MMA, strength and conditioning, and that's probably a decade old, really, you know, if that. And guys like yourself that are not only in the trenches, rolling your sleeves up, working with the athletes, but turn around and producing resources and helping others along the way, is noble calling and testament to who you are. And I appreciate you coming on the show, sharing. Appreciate how you're going about your business, and really thank you for coming on and being a part of it.
Yeah, it's been great.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.